Comedian Susie Essman is a veteran of late-night comedy in the world of stand-up, but she's probably best known for playing the sassy Susie Green on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm, bringing to it her own brand of biting sarcasm, pointed insults, and no-nonsense panache. Susie Green is the wife of Larry David's manager, Jeff, on the show, and in the role, she is often angry and yells at Larry, like in this scene when she discovers he has taken the head off of her daughter's doll.
The kid is home, hysterical, because her doll, Judy, has been decapitated because you two sickos took the head for God knows what reason.
Earlier this year, Susie Essman joined us from Albany, New York, and I started our conversation by asking her if she gets frustrated by fans who think she is her character from Curb.
It's this little thing called acting.
But it feels like you're annoyed by that.
Well, it's not that I'm annoyed. It's just that people assume I'm her. And I guess that just means that I'm a good actress, but I'm not her. Well, it's a character I created. Who could be her? Who could live in her skin and wear those outfits?
Well, what should we know about you that we don't because we see you as Susie Green on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Number one, I don't dress like that. Number two, I'm not screaming and yelling. I'm not filled with rage. I get that all out on stage and when I'm acting. In real life, I'm not filled with rage.
And you've actually tackled this on the show, not you, but with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who faced this with her character from Seinfeld, with Jason Alexander, who did the same. Let's listen to him talking with Larry David about that.
I can't shake this George thing.
Really?
They all see me as George.
I mean, the thing about it is that you're not even close to George. I tell this to people all the time. You can't imagine what a great actor this guy is.
Oh.
He is nothing like that character.
Thank you.
Nothing.
You know, the funny thing about that is that really Larry was the George character.
Right.
All of George's scenarios were based on Larry. When I first met Larry in 1985, 86, at Catch a Rising Star, he would stand in the bar area and just bemoan to me and Joy Behar about all his love life problems, which later on we saw as George storylines. The thing with the answering machine, all that stuff, that was all Larry stories.
So does that happen with you?
What, that people think I'm Susie Green? Yes. And they're usually, when they come up to me on the street and I'm gracious, they're visibly disappointed. I'm disappointing people all over this great land of ours, Jeremy.
All right. Well, one of the things that you do talk about as Susie Essman in your stand-up is family. I want to listen to a little bit of a routine that you did a few years back in New York. You're talking about how your mother and father love it when each other gets sick.
And she said to me, "We think Daddy has a brain tumor." "And I have the suicide instructions." "And I told him if he only has one good year left to live, we're going to do everything that I want to do."
Is that really true?
Word for word, true.
Well, how did your family members react, or how do they react when you talk about them in your act?
They're not allowed to come. My mother is not allowed to come. You know, when I first started doing stand-up, it was almost 30 years ago, I was in a club in the city at the Duplex, this tiny little club in the Village. And I walk out on stage, and there are my parents, Zora and Lenny, sitting right in the front row. They came and they sat right in the front row. And I just looked at them and I was ready to just strangle them, you know? I mean, I know they thought they were doing the right thing, but it was just after that they were banned. They were just completely banned. They're not allowed to come.
But do you find that that makes the best material to talk about them?
Yeah, you know, well, it depends. I mean, whatever's real makes the best material. I talk a lot about my kids. I mean, I just brought up four teenagers. We're empty nesters now. But I had four teenagers that I raised. My parents aging. You know, whatever's personal to me in the moment is what's best to talk about. I'm not one of these comics that talks about, you know, like airlines or
right.
That, you know, it's about my life.
Do you find that different audiences react differently to your comedy, or do you find that you have to tailor it depending on where you are?
No, you know, it's universal. It's interesting because people always think that nobody really relates to Curb except on the coasts. And it's not true. I've traveled all over the country. I had a guy come up to me recently from Africa. He was an African immigrant in New York City telling me that my mother, when he sees me do my mother in my act, is exactly like his mother.
Hmm.
So there's a universe. Yes, my mother's a Jewish mother and typical Jewish mother in many ways. But there's a universality. Is that the word? Universalness about all the characters, I think, and about what I talk about. Everybody talks about having, you know, everybody has kids, has teenager kids that drive them crazy and parents that drive them crazy and husbands that drive them crazy. It's universal.
When you first started out, you experienced depression, which even though we don't think of stand-up comics as being depressed ever, a lot of them have dealt with that. I wonder what your advice would be to a new starting out stand-up comic today to avoid that, if possible. Is it possible?
You know, the stand-up didn't, the depression didn't come from the stand-up. The depression was there, which kind of forced me into the stand-up because I was so deeply depressed. I had nowhere to go but down. Otherwise, I would never have done this crazy thing. That depression almost was the impetus to do the stand-up. Hmm. If I was happy, I don't know that I would have gotten on stage in front of strangers and tried to make them laugh. So my advice to young comedians is always get on stage as much as you can and find your voice. Be true to your voice. Don't listen to anybody else. Do what you think is funny.
But how do you keep it fresh over the years?
Well, you know, I always add new material, and every audience is different. And I work the room a lot, so it's always fresh and different. And I don't have an order. I never know where I'm going. So I think that helps a lot. It also causes tremendous anxiety. Hmm. I mean, I usually know what my opening line is going to be, but from then it's just whatever is going. I'll just feel the room and just take it someplace. And so every performance is completely different. And I like it that way. I like a live experience to feel truly live, that we're kind of all in this experience together and we're experiencing this moment and it's never going to happen again. Like sex.
How often do you, when you are working on a routine, decide that something's going too far, that you have to pull it back?
You know, that's just a kind of an instinct kind of a thing. I don't know how often that happens. Not too often. I think after all these years, my instincts are pretty good. Sometimes I'll be on stage and I'll just be spontaneous with something and I'll feel that little thing crawling up my spine, which is like, uh-oh, you went over the line. But it doesn't happen that often.
But you've talked about the importance of likability for a comedian.
Yeah. Well, accessibility as much as likability. My theory about the audience is that the audience wants to feel relaxed and they want to feel like the comedian is in control and that they're just the contract you have with them is that I'm going to take care of you for this next hour in the Wilbur Theater in Boston and you're going to relax and laugh and enjoy yourself. The reason why, you know, when you feel really uncomfortable when you see a bad comic or you see a comic dying.
Yeah.
That uncomfortable. It's because the contract is broken. All of a sudden, you, the audience member, has to take care of them.
Well, have you ever lost control?
Not over something. Well, yeah, in the beginning, of course, all the time. Hmm. In recent years, only if the venue was out of control. And by that, I mean, I did a gig recently that was a private party. It was in a great big grand ballroom. The sound was horrible. They could barely see me. There was no spotlight on me. They could barely see me. They couldn't hear me. They couldn't see me. And there was buffet tables on each side of the room where they were eating and drinking. So in that sense, I could lose control. But if it's a theater or a club, rarely do I lose control.
Okay, well, Susie Essman, before I let you go, I just want to ask you to do one thing for me, and we'll just, you know, bleep out everything here. But if you
tell
could
you
please,
to go
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Just tell me off, please, as Susie Green.
Jeremy, you redheaded Boston. You and your Red Sox too.
Susie Essman.
I grew up in the Bronx. You know, my grandmother lived on Jerome Avenue and 161st Street. I have my loyalties.
Susie Essman, it's been so great talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.